Vasudevaya. Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Hare Krishna. So we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam 6th canto, chapter 9, text 48.
Kim durapan mai prite tatapi vibhudhar shvaha maye kanta matir nanyan matovan chatitat pavit Kim durapam mayi pritte tatapi vibhudarshava maye kanta matir nanyan matavan chati tatvavi Kim durapam mayi pritte Tatapi vibhudar shabha Maye kanta matir nanyam Matavan chatitat pavit Rapam mayi pute
Ladies. Kim, what? Durapam, difficult to obtain. Mayi, when I. Prite, satisfied. Tatapi, still. Vibhuta Rishabaha. O best of the intelligent demigods. Mayi, in me. Ekanta. Exclusively fixed. Motihi, whose attention. Na anyat, not anything other. Mata, than me. Banchati, desires. tatvavit, one who knows the truth. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. O best of the intelligent demigods, although it is true that nothing is difficult for one to obtain when I am pleased with him, a pure devotee whose mind is exclusively fixed upon me does not ask me for anything but the opportunity to engage in devotional service. Purport. When the demigods finished offering their prayers, they anxiously waited for their enemy, Vritrasura, to be killed. This means that the demigods are not pure devotees. Ooh. Although without difficulty one can get anything he desires if the Lord is pleased, the demigods aspire for material profit by pleasing the Lord. The Lord wanted the demigods to pray for unalloyed devotional service, but instead, they prayed for an opportunity to kill the enemy. This is the difference between a pure devotee and a devotee on the material platform. Indirectly, the Lord regretted that the demigods did not ask for pure devotional service. Om Agyana Timrandasya Gnanjana Shalakaya Chakramilitam Dena Tasmai Sri Gurve Namaha Mukham Kuroti Vachalam Bangalayati Gidin Jatkripatam Ham Vande Sri Gurum Dinitarinam Paramananda Madhavam Sri Chaitanyishwaram. So, we're continuing this pastime of Indra, the Indra story. This is the big Indra story in the Bhagavatam. And we know how it began. It began with offense. And then there's more offense. And then there's really big offense when he kills Vritrasura. And then there's results of the offense. And finally, there's prayaschitta he does, and then he's back on the throne. So we are hearing this whole story of Indra. He is the one in the Bhagavatam who just doesn't seem to get it. He doesn't get it. He's got everything. He's got the throne of the of heaven, he's got everything, but he just doesn't get it. He constantly just screws up. This is not the last time. I mean, you know, of course, we don't know just exactly what happens, you know, after finally he screws up really royal with Krishna himself. And he comes and he tries to surrender. He comes to him and he's so afraid. He says, Sarabi, come with me. I can't face Krishna alone. Maybe you, he loves the cows, maybe you'll make him feel a bit better because I screwed up again. But Indra, anyway, he's not alone in his difficulty. As we can see here, he's accompanied by a host of others that we call the demigods. The demigods in this world, we don't see them directly, but they're there. We have a relationship with them. They're, without them, basically nothing happens. I mean, there's a demigod for your breath. There's a demigod for the direction that you go in. There's a demigod for the light. There's a demigod for the air. There's a demigod for the water. There's 33 million of these demigods who basically make everything work. We don't make anything work. I mean, we all have that experience, right? I mean, we want something to work in our bodies even, and it just, you know, we can't make it work. Although sometimes I see that Bhanubhata does make it work. He's still dancing. He's still chanting. At our age, Bhanubhata, what do you think? I think we have a motto, dance while you can, right? Because there will come a time, and some of you may already have reached it, where you want to dance, but the body just doesn't cooperate. You know, you jump up and you come down, and oh, what's that? You know, something goes. So we don't control our world, though we like to think we do. Our world is actually controlled. Everything that's going on is going on under modes of material nature, the three gunas. And these three gunas, they are expressed, they express themselves not by chance, not even by natural law. The modern perspective is that everything is going on by natural laws, right? There are natural laws. There's a law of gravity. There's the second law of thermodynamics. There's the conservation of energy. There's all types of laws, physical laws. And that these laws are what make everything happen. There's a cause and an effect. And that beyond the laws, it's all chance. It's all just chance. The wind blowing this way or that way, just chance. And by the blowing of that wind, that rain may come or not come, by chance. And if the rain doesn't come, then there's no crop, by chance. And if there's no crop, then new laws start to come into effect, called the law of supply and demand. Now, we may not be aware of this because we don't use this product, but farmers in India now are really distressed because onions have become damn cheap. There's like, I read yesterday, I have the habit of, in time to time, just keeping up with the news. And nowadays, you don't have to buy a newspaper. You just pull out your phone. And sometimes there's something interesting. And it caught my eye that farmers are all upset because onions are 50 paisa a kilo or something in the wholesale market. Now, some of you may remember, I think most of you, well, some of you are not perhaps old enough. I don't remember exactly when this, it must have been 15 years ago or so, that there were practically riots over the price of onions. in India. Do you remember? Because onions had become so expensive. So this is another so-called law, the law of supply and demand. There's too much supply, the demand has gone down, okay, onions are cheap. And then that kicks in other reactions, and things go on and on. And people think this is all just happening according to chance and laws, material laws. It's a combination of chance and material laws. They have no conception. At least the scientists, they have no idea that there could be some intelligence behind all of this. Or, let's say, personality. Because I can't really say for sure, and I think probably I wouldn't be incorrect to say that Indra and these various demigods don't always act intelligently. It's not that, you know, their activities in this universe is all well thought out. In fact, quite often, they act very emotionally. Really, you know, I mean, look at them now. They're not using their intelligence. And although Krishna is appearing to them and he's saying, well, you're not really being very intelligent here, because you're asking for what? You want to defeat your enemy. How did this all get started? It didn't get started very intelligently. Indra, his insult to Brihaspati was not very intelligent. It was born completely out of unintelligent pride. There's no intelligence, really, in pride. There's nothing smart about being proud. In fact, it's the opposite. Those who are truly intelligent, they're not proud. Because they know, they understand that whatever they have, whatever ability they have, it's not due to their own greatness, their own power. Indra was thinking that he was so powerful, the king, that he could ignore his own guru. His own guru. He could...
You may be my guru, but I am Indra.
Brihaspati didn't even bother to correct him. Didn't even bother to say anything. He just turned around and walked out forever. That's it. Hopeless case. And Indra, as we know, things go from bad to worse. He ends up killing. And now he's faced with Vritrasura. So we can't really say that there's a lot of intelligence operating in this sphere. There's a lot of emotion. So next time there's a big storm or there's some big, you know, disturbance in the material energy field, Hare Krishna. Even the sun. We know that the sun, we feel the wind sometimes getting quite excited. We feel the oceans sometimes getting excited. We certainly feel the heat getting more and more.
People who look at study the sun observe that from time to time the sun just has these like eruptions of explosions of within its body. And these explosions in the sun, they send out these electromagnetic waves which just run into the planets and they create all kinds of disturbances. So this is happening all around us. The personalities, these devas, they're persons. And they're, unfortunately, not always so intelligent. But sometimes there's some emotion involved. And now, here they are, coming, and they have Krishna in front of them. Now they have enough intelligence to recognize when they need help. That they have that intel. They've understood we need help. We need the help of the Supreme Lord. And they offer very intelligent prayers. What you've been hearing are filled with philosophy, which makes it even more surprising, isn't it? They're all speaking very philosophically. They seem to understand so nicely the philosophy of Vedic understanding of the universe. They speak so well. And yet, as pointed out here by Srila Prabhupada, when they're finished with their prayers, they've been doing this prayers, they've been speaking so nicely, so wonderfully, so beautifully, and then Krishna appears, and now what are they thinking? Oh, he's going to kill Vishasura. Okay. It's like, you know, look at us. We make the motions, perhaps. We understand the words and we repeat the prayers. But what do we want? What do we desire? What's our actual desire? That's the question. So here, Krishna's pointing out. Of course, he's not in his Shyamasundar form. At least doesn't say exactly, but I think we can assume that he is in his Vishnu form at this point. He doesn't often grant his Shyamasundar darshan to the demigods. And we know that Indra had a problem recognizing Krishna in that form. But they know him when he comes. When he comes with four hands, they okay, that's Vishnu. Okay, we understand. And not only that, but as we see here, he came. I think before this, they say that he appeared, and he had a lot of a whole number of his associates who also were four-handed. No. Anyway. But Krishna said, well, all right, but this is not very intelligent. This is the first verse. In the next two verses, he continues on this theme. This is not really intelligent, what you're asking me for. If you were really intelligent, if you were, you would understand who you really are. You would really understand who you are. You're all identifying as demigods. You're all thinking you're these great demigods. And you've got these other, and they're your enemies. You're all thinking friends, enemies. You're thinking that you will regain your positions and your power and enjoy. And you're not thinking who you are. Jiver Surupoi Nitya Krishna Das Ekala Ishvara Arsha Britya. You're not thinking that you're actually servants. You have some idea, yes, okay, we serve you. You're saying the words. We're your servants. I accept. You do some service. Krishna does create this world for his purpose. This is his world. This world doesn't belong to the demigods. Doesn't belong to Brahma and Shiva. It belongs to Krishna, to Vishnu. It's his world. It's his Srishti Leela. He's enjoying this world. And the demigods serve him in maintaining this world, making it work, creating it to begin with, and populating it, and then running it as the universal government. So they are serving. But they're serving, as Prabhupada points it out, they're devotees. They are devotees. He's not saying that the demigods are not devotees. They're definitely devotees. And we can see by their whole mood, they're definitely devotees. But what kind of devotees are they? Prabhupada describes that they are devotees on the material platform. So the Bhagavatam is our guide to pure devotional service. So again and again, the Bhagavatam gives us lessons to understand the difference between pure devotional service and devotional service on the material platform. And Krishna is describing it here very succinctly, where he says, a pure devotee whose mind is exclusively fixed upon me. The word here in the translation of, and the word used here is Mayi ekanta matir nanyat. Mayi ekanta mati nanyat. Ekanta mati. In the synonyms, it translates mati as attention. When Krishna is saying, when your attention, your focus is na anyat, ekanta mati, mai ekanta mati na anyat. Your attention is focused on Krishna and nothing else. Then what happens? Matavanchati tatvavit. Matavanchati. Your vancha, your desires. Vancha kalpataruvyascha kripa sindhuvyeva. Your vanch is mata, is only for Krishna. Your only desire is for Krishna. That's pure devotional service. Beginning with the attention. So, we've been given a simple path to bring our attention into Krishna through a very simple process. It involves just a few things. The mouth, the ears, the heart, and the mind, the thoughts. With our mouth we say, Hare Krishna. Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. We hear with our ears. We open our hearts. And we take the thoughts, the attention of our mind, and we take the mind's attention and bring it into the name of Krishna. And as we do this, we feel in our hearts a desire. And the desire that we cultivate is that we get a new house and then another, maybe a nice car, and no. We desire service. That Prabhupada, when he first gave, he said, well, what is the meaning of this mantra? O Lord, O energy of the Lord, please engage me in your service. Because that's who we are. The demigods were not understanding fully their identity as servants. Fully, only, 100%, nothing else, only servants. No other job. We have no other role. We have no other thing to do but to serve. That's what we exist. That's who we are. We're servants. We are the servants of Krishna. We're his objects of enjoyment. He's the enjoyer. We're the objects of his enjoyment. He's the master. We're the servants. Very simple. Demigods just, they get it confused. Indra especially gets it confused all the time. Who's who? Who's really who? But Krishna is very kind to Indra. He needs a king of heaven, I guess, and Indra at least is, you know, a devotee. So, and Indra teaches us so many lessons we can learn, because we all want to be little Indras in our little kingdoms. We create our little kingdoms of, we try to make them heavenly, and we try to rule. We have our associates and so on. So the big Indra, he teaches us there's no gain in that path. But the path of pure devotional service, of complete surrender, that path is the path of reality, because it's who we are. We just have to wake up and realize it by the grace of Krishna, who so kindly appears to us in his holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. So I'm going to end here. And we have a few minutes, although I'm here for some service. And so my time is a little limited, so I can't, maybe 5 minutes or so, and then I have to go. So anyone want to give a comment, add to our discussion, or a question? Otherwise, take it. Yes. Oh.
You said there is a 33 million
We've heard that.
That relates to the controlling. That is controlling service.
Yes, that's what we've heard. Well, I don't, I think what you're saying is that there are 33 million devatas, but in there are other, you know, there's the pitris, there's the residents of Tapalok and Maharlok, and there's many, many others. But yeah, it sounds like a, you know, 33 million in the government for a universe that is pretty big. It has unlimited. It's mysterious. I can't answer that. I mean, one of the mysteries that I have, at least, is just, you know, what when we say universe, what do we mean? You know, do we mean, you know, everything that you see when you look out, or is there some, you know? I mean, anyway, it's a mystery. And even the numbers are mysterious. If you think that's mysterious, then there's also, I've heard, and I don't know exactly, you know, it's commonly expressed in our society, that there is evolution of the jiva, that the jivas have a natural evolutionary process of migrating, transmigrating, from lower species to higher species. Is that right? I mean, I don't know exactly where that's expressed, but it's something that we commonly accept as... Okay, now try this on for size. How many humans are there? That, you know, we count humans. So on this planet, at least, there's 6-something billion. Now, how many blades of grass are there? How many insects are there? So how does it work? How, if the jivas are, you know, there's trillions and trillions and trillions of jivas in various lower species, how do they all end up in human bodies through the numbers don't, I mean, it's, I once, because I have the terrible affliction of being a speculator. I'm addicted in many ways to mental speculation. So I have this terrible brain that just doesn't give me peace and latches on to insignificant, trivial problems like that actually have no bearing whatsoever on the real matter of becoming devotees of Krishna. It actually has nothing to do with it, but it's just an interesting problem. You know, there are people, you know, they get the newspaper just to get the crossword puzzle, right? Because they want to solve the problem. So here's an intellectual problem. How do you fit trillions of microbes into a limited number of human species? And then then there's all kinds of speculative possibilities of multiple universes and multiple planets and this and that. And you can end up speculating so many different ways. So the same way, 33 million, how does 33 million work? And I, you know, who knows? But fortunately, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It's just an interesting factoid. An interesting factoid of the universe. But it doesn't really matter. It matters to understand, and we should understand the world that we live in, that it's not controlled by chance, that there are persons who control this world, and their emotions and their personalities and their intelligence affects everything around us. But beyond that, how it actually works, we leave it to our scientists, our devotee scientists, let them try to figure it out. Because if they do, Because this is important. That if some of our devotee scientists who have the kind of brains to work this out and so on, if they can come up with theories, and again, they don't have to prove. This is the nice thing about science. You don't have to prove anything. Science, the scientific world, you know, you just have to make it possible, you know, interesting theory that might, you know, actually explain things, and you can maybe get close to something that almost sort of proves it, and then you win the Nobel Prize. So you know, we leave it to our scientists, and we have scientists. We have devotee scientists who are working on these issues and coming up with different possibilities. And when they do, which they will, because Prabhupada gave them that task, he gave it first to initial group, and now their service is carried on by others. When they do, then it will have a profound effect on the world. So it will open them up to the Srimad Bhagavatam, because the clues are in the Bhagavatam, as far as I've been told by our devotee scientists. All the clues to understand this universe, really understand this universe, are in the Srimad Bhagavatam, especially in the Sankhya philosophy. But I leave it to them. So, anyway. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna.